not everything I'm going to talk about today is illegal, but everything that I'm going to talk about today is bad for regular Americans.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
I'm a geek. I'm a nerd. I'm a data wonk.
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I talk about food a lot on the show. It's a thing. I am a foodie.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, it's a very busy day of weather across the state of Wisconsin. I'm coming to you in southeastern Wisconsin from WAUK 540 AM 101.1 FM. We have yet to get the brunt of the weather systems moving through, but I'm very happy to be joined from Severe Weather Studios by Corey Hartman to give an update on the rest of the state and the golf ball size, pea size, I don't know, maybe even bigger sized hail that's coming down. We've got some tornado action. Corey, tell the listeners about it.
Hey, Maggie. Yeah, we've been putting the Civic Media Radio Network in full business here this afternoon. We've had reports of, as you said, anywhere from pea to golf ball size hail, all the way from the Madison area, all the way back to Eau Claire. Multiple tornado reports were happening back into portions of western Minnesota near the Roberts area, near the Baldwin area, and those did touch down. We had confirmations of those. We did have a brief touchdown in the Portage area just about 20 minutes ago. We actually caught that on a couple of our Storm Chaser live feeds, and that happened as well. So we've really had kind of all of it going on, and there is a tornado watch that remains in effect for pretty much the entire state of Wisconsin except for the far northeastern counties.
So that means, even is there a tornado watch as well here in southeastern Wisconsin?
Yes, it's the entire state except for the far northeast. Yep. So we've got the threat, the possibility of all of the ingredients coming together for tornadoes. In fact, a severe thunderstorm warning just issued for the Waukesha area. That's for Waukesha and Washington counties until 5:45. That's for some quarter-size hail and 60-mile-per-hour winds. But that particular storm is all by itself heading toward Waukesha. We don't like when the storms are all by themselves because they have the potential to use all of those ingredients and possibly turn more severe. So we're keeping our eye on the radar closely here this evening.
Same question that I asked Mace at the top of the show, Corey. Anyone in the state right now that needs to take shelter immediately or be on the lookout for warnings to take shelter as you understand things?
Yeah, absolutely. So northeast of Portage, north of Partyville, near Dalton right now, there's strong indication of rotation. And again, that was where we had the confirmed couple of touchdowns, was right in Portage about 15 minutes ago. So further north and east of there, Dalton, Kingston, that's where we've got the potential for tornadoes. Also near Adams right now, Adams Friendship, there's a possible tornado there. And a confirmed tornado is a little bit further to the north and west near Abbotsford, Wisconsin, west of Marshfield near Loyal, the potential of a tornado there. So there's actually three locations right now along this line that could see a tornado, and a tornado did touch down near Neillsville, Wisconsin about 20 minutes ago.
Well, Corey, please do keep us updated. Folks, that's Corey Hartman from Severe Weather Studios. Thank you for keeping us safe. And stay tuned here, ladies and gentlemen, to the Civic Media Radio Network. We will, of course, on this program, continue to be bringing you breaking weather news so that you and your families can stay safe. Corey, thanks again. You stay safe out there, my friend.
You bet. And we do break in individual stations as conditions warrant in each market. So.
Thank you, Corey. So again, as individual conditions warrant within each market, no matter what station you are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network on, we will keep you apprised of what's going on in your neck of the woods so that you and your families can stay safe. Again, thank you, Corey. With that weather update now completed, I've got to take you all to the Supreme Court arguments that occurred this morning. Let's set the stage. Of course, as you well know, as your legal eagle here on the airwaves, I spent my morning listening to the Supreme Court arguments so that you don't have to. They can be a little bit dry and technocratic, but here's the gist of things. Recall, if you will, that Donald Trump, on his first day after getting inaugurated, signed an executive order purporting to get rid of birthright citizenship. Birthright citizenship meaning this: if you are born in this country, you are a citizen. It doesn't matter if your mother or your father are here illegally or only on temporary protected status. If you are born here, you are a citizen. This has been the legal interpretation under the Supreme Court for 127 years. The initial decision related to a Chinese American who was not permitted to exit a ship after visiting China. He was a born here American citizen. He was forced to stay on this ship. It resulted in a Supreme Court case 127 years ago. Since then, three subsequent Supreme Court cases have upheld birthright citizenship. But the Trump administration says that it can do away with this with the stroke of a pen by fiat. So this is the case. There are a number of cases in various federal district courts challenging the Trump administration's executive order. Now, what's fascinating about this case is that some of these district courts, these are the trial courts within the federal court system, have issued what purport to be injunctions that prevent the Trump administration from implementing this executive order anywhere, meaning beyond the jurisdiction of that district court. For example, there are two district courts in the state of Wisconsin, the Eastern District and the Western District. Judge Dugan's criminal case is proceeding in the Eastern District, for example. So what an injunction in some of these cases where judges have found the president's executive order to be unconstitutional have said is that even if, for example, the court found that, made that conclusion, reached that judgment in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, it would apply in the Western District and perhaps across the United States. So the Trump administration has not brought forward an immediate challenge to the underlying district court rulings, which have been unanimous that what the president has tried to do is unconstitutional. No, what they've asked the Supreme Court to hear on an emergency basis is whether or not a district court can enter an injunction that applies across the country. So they're making this technical procedural argument instead of getting about the business of just arguing about whether or not this thing is illegal. Now, take a pause here, ladies and gentlemen, and think about the implications. If a district court cannot proclaim or conclude that what an administration, what a particular president is trying to do is unconstitutional and prohibit the administration from enforcing that decision, that policy, hear that executive order nationwide, what constitutional harms, what irreparable harms may occur to individuals that don't happen to be covered by that particular individual district court's initial ruling? The potential for grave harm to people in this case is quite unique, quite extraordinary. And indeed, the unanimity with which the district courts have ruled, always against the administration, always concluding that what they're trying to do is unconstitutional, in the face of 127 years of Supreme Court precedent, in the face of every single presidential administration over those 127 years abiding by those rulings, why then is it even a facially reasonable argument for the Trump administration to say, well, a district court can't tell us that we can't enforce this. It's been unconstitutional for 127 years, and all courts that have ever heard this question in that period of time have ruled that birthright citizenship is a thing. Well, we want to just declare this newborn to be not a citizen in this other district. What chaos would ensue? What unfairness? That's what was before the Supreme Court today. Now, there's a lot of technicalities moving around here, but I wanted to give and share with you some of what I consider to be the aha moments in these arguments. What you're going to hear first is from Justice Sonia Sotomayor. And Jacob, this is going to be cut 23. Cut 23.
So when a new president orders that because there's so much gun violence going on in the country, and he comes in and he says, I have the right to take away the guns from everyone, then people, and he sends out the military to seize everyone's guns. We and the courts have to sit back and wait until every named plaintiff gets, or every plaintiff whose gun is taken comes into court.
Consider that. Now, in that quote, we didn't have the answer from the government's lawyer, but what he said in response to that question from Justice Sotomayor was, yes, that's what we're saying. So I've gotten a couple of texts while we've been on the air from some of our conservative friends saying, why do these liberals not always just want to violate the law and do all those things? Here, respectfully, it is the Trump administration that has been found by both Republican and democratically appointed judges to be violating the law. And if you don't really care about birthright citizenship, then as Justice Sotomayor is pointing out, maybe you care about the Second Amendment. So what if a president issued an executive order that said you no longer have a Second Amendment right to bear arms? And as the justice pointed out, I'm dispatching the U.S. military and any other U.S. law enforcement to seize weapons of every single American citizen from coast to coast. If what the Trump administration is arguing in the birthright citizenship case today in the Supreme Court is accurate, then each and every gun owner in America potentially would need to bring an individual action to prevent the federal government from seizing their weapons, even though that order would be so facially unconstitutional as to beggar any argument to the contrary. So if that's bothersome to you as a conservative, then you should be equally bothered by this idea that the Trump administration is arguing today in the Supreme Court that each individual, newborn's parent has to argue before a court, has to avail themselves of legal process, has to have the money, the means, the knowledge to retain a lawyer to argue about these things. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not the way our Constitution was ever conceived of to operate. Now, there are legitimate problems with these sort of broad injunctions that some district courts have been entering. And we've seesawed back and forth. During the first Trump administration, a lot of lawsuits were brought challenging Trump administration actions in the Ninth Circuit, because it's considered to be more liberally leaning. During the Biden administration, a lot of lawsuits were brought in districts in Texas, in the Fifth Circuit, because it's considered to be more conservative. But I offer to you this. Is this really how our rights are supposed to be defined? One individual, one case, one district court at a time? And if so, then what remains of our Constitution except perhaps a statement of principles, of hopes that you will need to spend your money to vindicate every time the federal government violates your fundamental rights. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.